I got really well at knocking doors because I found the top sales rep and I just asked, what do you say? What do you do? What do you wear? Where do I move? How do I knock a door? Anything and everything you guys train your sales reps on.
Right.
And I became the top girl rep. Well, fast forward, how do I find that same person in real estate?
Okay.
And then how do I find that person in raising capital? So a lot of other people have deals and I'm just the capital raiser, which I'm using my sales skills, or I just like to utilize the word communicate. I'm really good at communicating the deal to the money.
Great experiences build great leaders. Great leaders build great teams. This is Building Great Sales Teams.
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I've got a special guest for you guys today, and she exemplifies what I always wanted when I had a sales org, which is more women in door-to-door. Her name is Jill Jensen. She's gone from door to door to having her own pest control company and being an investor. And now she's the chief investment officer at Sonos Capital. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Awesome. So I've got a client and he just hired his first girl and he's got probably about 40 plus reps. And his model right now is they do Airbnbs, right? They have everybody, you know, they do like 3 weeks on, 1 week off. It's a great model. He's teaching them, you know, growth and development. They're doing cold plunges. Like the vibes are good, you know, and this poor girl is walking into this house full. And their whole age group is like 19 to 22. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Anyways, so shout out to Noelle. That's her name. And I think you're uniquely qualified to basically give her some advice. So what advice would you have for her? She's been there for a few weeks now. She's done really well. She high rolled the company like her second week. So she's doing well. But what advice would you have her being in a male dominated business like that?
What's her role there?
Oh, she's a door knocker, a sales rep.
Okay. So she's knocking doors.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I feel for you, Noelle, because my first year, I was the only girl on the team, and you have an advantage. So I sold pest control, and when a woman came to the door, they were not threatened. It was just another girl. Well, when a guy comes to the door, he's like, why is there a woman at the door?
Uh-huh.
And so being able to leverage that, just you have a few extra seconds in the beginning of your approach. So just lean into being a woman.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. And that's what, you know, I've had several women work for me as well as I've worked with several women. And they totally take advantage of that at the door. It's like the wall is already down versus when a guy goes to the door, he's got to break that barrier, you know what I'm saying, to get the other guy chopping it up, or, you know, if the homeowner's a woman, make her feel safe immediately. And so there's no wall there. So right away, you got the advantage on.
Exactly.
All right. So tell us more about what you're doing today.
So I am in real estate and it started in pest control. And then I took a shift. And what happened was I started as a sales rep and did really well, made six figures in one summer as a 20-year-old girl, and started recruiting other sales reps and then managers. Former husband and I, we started our own pest control. So that went nationwide. We had seven branches, business partners, training hundreds of sales reps, call center, technician, customers, you name it. So the whole thing. Well, I got bought out of that company, fast forward, and I was like, okay, I've got a clean slate. What do I want to do? And I'm taking the same concept that I did at pest control now in real estate. And because I got bought out, it was like, okay, I have money. How do I get my money making me money?
You've successfully exited the door-to-door business, which is rare.
It's so rare. It's you get sucked in, and it's like after you leave, it's like I could go work that job or I could go knock doors for one Saturday and make more than you the entire month. No, I'm not. My only W-2 job was in high school, so I can't go back.
So tell us more about those skills that transferred. You know, what are you doing now in real estate that came, you know, without a doubt came from your door-to-door experience?
I got really well at knocking doors because I found the top sales rep and I just asked, what do you say? What do you do? What do you wear? Where do I move? How do I knock a door? Anything and everything you guys train your sales reps on.
Right.
And I became the top girl rep. Well, fast forward, how do I find that same person in real estate?
Okay.
And then how do I find that person in raising capital? So a lot of other people have deals and I'm just the capital raiser, which I'm using my sales skills, or I just like to utilize the word communicate. I'm really good at communicating the deal to the money.
Well, and one of the things that you mentioned you're doing now is you're also training people how to raise capital as well, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so one of the things you learn in door-to-door is how to teach. You know, you have to learn it pretty fast. If you want to move up in the company, you're not going to move up very quickly if you don't know how to teach. And so how are you transferring that as well?
So when you are trying to find someone that has money, you have to be able to sell yourself or your story. So personally, as a sales rep, I have money in the bank. And I had an issue where it's like, my problem was, I just need my money making me money.
Yeah.
Now that I have it, now not only make me money, but how can I save money? Because none of us like taxes. And yesterday was April 15th.
Yeah.
So this is a great fresh start to the next year. So I had this problem and I just needed my money making me money. Now I'm able to align someone that has the deal to the money. And being able to show them, hey, look, I went through those steps. I went through that process of vetting the person, because it comes down more to finding the right who, not figuring out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I find the person that already has the system or that's been doing real estate for years or lending their own money, I feel more comfortable in their deals.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And where do you find, I guess, what is that avatar for you? Somebody that's already in real estate?
How do you mean the person? Oh, so here's the interesting thing is you can find different people in all different areas that have money to invest. For example, I work with investment groups. So people that are already in real estate investing. And I went to this meetup. Well, it was this big convention on how to raise capital. And a gentleman said, find your avatar in raising capital. So everybody in real estate is either in apartment complex, single family, Airbnb. Well, when you're raising capital, you want to find the same thing. What right. type of person do you want to raise capital from? And there's all these different avenues of where you can find money. And mm-hmm. mine is investor groups. Well, my second thought was, well, I'm really good at raising capital. Now I'm going to go out and find 12 people that all have their own avatar, mm-hmm. and I'm going to create a sales force of capital raisers instead of just getting good at myself. Other examples of avatars is I know a gentleman who used to be a dentist, and now he's a full-time real estate investor, mm-hmm. but his avatar is raising capital from other dentists. So I just hired 3 people this week, and one woman helps people with their self-directed IRAs. Trillions of dollars in retirement accounts that are just waiting for me to come help them invest it. So finding not just the type of investor, but also I'm finding type of avatars that can go raise capital.
There's a concept that one of my mentors, his name is Donnie Boivy. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's got a DFW, which is in B2B networking, right? And it's all about, you know, connecting with, you know, other people in virtual coffees and stuff like that, sure. But finding out if they can connect you to the people who sell the people, that you want to be connected to, that are your end customer, right? And so I love the way you're doing this because they have that association right away. So Dennis talking to Dennis, he understands the Dennis language. You know what I mean?
100%.
Retirement people talking to retirement people, they understand that language, or financial advisors, whatever the case is. And so it makes a ton of sense. You know, it's interesting how little we're all separated, because, you know, I found masterminds about 4 years ago, right? And one of the first things that I was pitched once I joined the mastermind was a multifamily investment. And so over the next couple of years, I've invested in a bunch of different ones, you know, apartment complexes, MDU, or like townhomes. And then the one that I'm in now is more like a diversified one. So it's general real estate. I don't know if you know Brandon Breedingham
by any chance. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm in his fund, and his has been the most consistent. Another one is Brandon Brooks. You know him? He does land investments. And so again, those two investments were great. Other ones like went from 100 to zero. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that was, I learned a lot. Because you know, you join a mastermind for the first time, you find your people, right? It's like, oh, I didn't know other entrepreneurs existed. You know what I mean? Like,
and then
you go like all into these groups, and you show up to every event and pay for every ticket. And after a while you realize, oh dang, I drank too much Kool-Aid. And now I deteriorate. And now I need to get rid of this tooth. And you know, metaphors aside, you realize you have to spend more time with people before you invest in them or their product or whatever the case is. So I guess saying all that, you know, people that listen to the show, maybe they've come into six-figure money as a new salesperson. Maybe they have their own business and, you know, maybe they have an extra 50 or 100 lying around in IRA, whatever the case is. How do you recommend they vet these deals?
Invest in the person, not the deal. I came into this not knowing real estate. Mm-hmm. And instead of learning from, I'm going to be polite, but I'm just going to state facts.
Yeah.
Instead of investing or lending to a poor person that needs my money, yeah, I'm like, where are the people I want to become? Mm-hmm. The wealthy people investing their money, and I want to be a part of your deals. Right. And a big thing that someone told me early on, one of my mentors, Pace Morby, he said, loan to own. Don't lend on a deal if you're not willing to own the worst case scenario.
Okay.
So we're going to take a fix and flip, for example. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to invest $150,000 on this fix and flip. Worst case scenario, it flops and they run out of money. Yeah. Are you willing to take on that project in some other state? If worst case scenario, mm-hmm. How I've avoided that, because I don't know how to underwrite and I don't know how to vet a deal, but mm-hmm. I've also never lost money in real estate. And when I first started out in smaller things like small commercial or small multifamily, mm-hmm. I held more collateral than my loan was worth. So I only invest to people that have multiple properties or personal guarantees with more money than my investment is worth. Mm-hmm. And so let's say that fix and flip flops. Well, unfortunately, I hold two of their properties that are already cash flowing.
Yeah.
So sorry, but if you lose, I actually win bigger, but it's really just to protect my money.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And that's a smart way to do it. I never did it that way. So it's just like, oh, you know, 8% returns, 10% returns, 12% returns. Sounds good. Here's my money. And, you know, it didn't work out too well. So
yeah, I'm a single mom. I can't lose my money. So yeah. I'm kind of I might come across as a blonde girl, but when it comes to money, I take it very serious.
No, I appreciate that for sure. So with the pest control company, because I have a client that's getting into pest control right now. He does shared solar. I don't know if you're familiar with it, the solar farms and selling the capacity to those solar farms. And so he's transitioning over into pest control. And from what I understand, pest control is a very low barrier of entry for you. Just basically you're starting your own brand. There's very, you know, maybe you need a few trucks and some materials and everything, but it's a very low barrier of entry. Now, how do you go from being that person that went from door to door to pest control and started their own business to nationwide offices. And, you know, I don't know how many, I'm assuming there's some millions in there in sales, you know what I mean? and to successfully exit.
I started out as a solo door rep. So started out on my own, and it's, you got to put in your time a little bit. So I did well on the doors, and I had a story. Other people are like, how did you become successful at that? Mm-hmm. Oh, here's an opportunity. I'm going to start recruiting people I know. And that grew. And it's like, okay, now how do I level up managers? Okay. Now the concept of I'm putting on all these accounts for Terminix and Aptiv and preventive pest control. Those should be my clients and my customers. So once again, find the company that's already doing it and model what they're already doing.
Beautiful. And, you know, one of the things that I appreciate about pest control is, like, you know, the reoccurring income, you know, because most of my career, and when I had my dealership, I had a dealership for AT&T for 13 years. And, you know, we sold other things like Vivint, DirecTV, B2B. We did some telemarketing too. But none of it was ever reoccurring, except, you know, there was some residual, but it was like a penny, you know, the account or whatever the case is. Yeah. And so it builds up over time. And it's funny, I still get deposits every now and then from AT&T, which is
just right. A very small one.
Yeah. It like pays for dinner one night. And I'm like, all right, I'm winning. But anyways, but that's one of the hardest things for, I guess, you to understand in door-to-door is like, hey, and this often happens when they first start out. They make the big checks initially because they're super excited. They have all the enthusiasm and motivation and work ethic in the world. And then they hit that sophomore slump, right?
Yeah.
And that's typically happening because it's not new and fresh anymore. It's like the honeymoon phase. It's over, you know? And so then their sales go down. And then all of a sudden they raised all their expenses to meet what they thought their income was going to be now. This is just going to be normal now. And so that happens all the time. And, you know, part of the development program that we put into place for clients is preparing them for that. Like, hey, you're going to make a bunch of money your first couple of weeks, but unless you're like the exception, it's going to level out, you know? Mm-hmm. And so obviously pest control is, you know, getting you that residual. But the biggest thing is how are you able to maintain it to the point where you could buy out? And I would imagine you have to keep churn super low, or you have to be ready for it or have a plan for it. So what was y'all's strategy in that case?
Okay, Doug, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I drove my high school car for 12 years. My sales reps drove better cars than I did. Mm-hmm. We lived in a townhome when other people were buying houses. So living below your means, if you really want long-term wealth, being willing to do things other people aren't willing to do. You have a large sum of money in your pocket. And the concept that you said was like perfect, where it's like, okay, that residual. And that's when it clicked, when we're like, we need to have our own customers. Because guess what? We pay our sales rep one time.
Yeah.
That customer stays for 3 years. Guess who's getting that money? Every year, not my sales rep, me. So the concept rolled over into real estate, where I'm like, okay, how can I place my money in something that can keep rolling over into something else? So just, it's really comes down to that mind shift.
Well, and you know, I would assume you're either younger or around the same age as me. And so the way that I grew up, it was very much scarcity mindset. And so When I did become successful very young, I didn't have any financial foundation. So what would you credit your financial foundation to? Because obviously you had one if you had the same vehicle for 12 years.
It's interesting because I had the same mindset of the scarcity, like kind of grew up and you make money and you don't spend it, you save it. And then mine shifted, and it was, how do I just make more of it? Mm-hmm. People are like, oh no, prices went up on this or that. And I'm like, okay, well, how do we just make more of it?
Yeah.
Instead of being scared of it.
It's so crazy because we had the same mindset. I used to tell my wife all the time, she'd get worried about bills or whatever, or the, you know, a big expense would be coming up. And then that's okay, I'll just make more money.
Yeah. You know what I
mean? Like,
there's plenty out there.
The only problem is, you know, the way that I thought about that is I didn't need to save it because I'll just make more. So long term. And again,
you gotta have the balance.
Yeah, 100%. So I definitely love what you told us about so far, all those skills transferring over to real estate. What are you guys excited about right now? Because I've checked out the website and everything. It looks like y'all primarily deal with mobile home parks. So yeah. why mobile home parks over, you know, traditional real estate or multi, you know, apartment complexes?
Okay, we're going to just dive into numbers and apartments versus mobile home parks.
Okay.
Well, we'll throw in homes too. So okay. Average home costs around $400,000, mm-hmm. where you can buy a modular home or a mobile home for $50,000. And an apartment, an average two-bedroom, one-bathroom house, or I should say apartment, two-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment, costs around $2,000, mm-hmm. where a mobile home to rent or lease the land your house is sitting on is only $500. The average person stays in an apartment for 2 years, and the average person, once they move into a mobile home, is 14 years. And so ours is kind of like a fix and flip model. Right now, I'm closing on a park next week, and it's 102 units, and it's 60% occupied, mm-hmm. and it's 40% unoccupied. So we're bringing in 40 homes, and we're selling all of them. It's currently cash flowing $184,000 a year, and that's after expenses, and that's only 60% occupied, and the rents are below market. Wow. So my goal and what I'm going to do is buy all these homes, and there's a high demand for affordable housing. And so I'm selling the homes at cost, which means I'm going to sell them faster and I'm providing affordable housing. My goal is to collect rent on every pad, mm-hmm. at $550, and there's 102 units. So every single month I'm getting $550 on 102 parking spots. Mm-hmm. So it's owning an expensive parking lot. So what that means is there's no tenants because I don't take care of the house. They bought it. There's no toilets. I'm not fixing your toilet or your roof because you own your own house. Okay. Low maintenance. I have some landscapers. Sometimes we need to fix a pothole or a hit mailbox. Mm-hmm. High cash flow and high returns for my investors. And on top of it, high depreciation, which means I can write off a lot on my taxes along with all my investors.
Where does the depreciation come from?
Single family homes depreciates over 27 years, mm-hmm. and mobile home parks is only 15. Oh. I'm also purchasing 40 homes. So yeah. I'm buying a lot of real estate, which mm-hmm. means more depreciation that I can divvy out between my LPs, my limited partners, and also my general partners. So example, someone puts in $100,000 on this deal. Mm-hmm. Over a five-year span, they will make $239,000 on okay. top of their 100K. So more than double the amount they put in there. So you have $100,000 today, end of year five, you'll have $339,000. On top of that, you have more tax depreciation than your investment. So depending upon, I'm no CPA, but it depends upon if you're just an LLC and you're putting 100K in from your business, you can write off around $122,000.
Wow.
So not only show you how to save money, but make money.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand this correctly. So normally when you invest in, let's just say a traditional real estate syndication, mm-hmm. they're fixing flips, they're buying rental properties and collecting rents and everything. They're collecting on the house, right? And technically the land too, but at the end of the day, it's the house, right? So what you guys are doing is you're buying the mobile home park and you've got 40 units that are unoccupied, right? So I'm assuming that's what creates somewhat of a discount is, you know, it's not all, real estate value, or I'm sorry, investment value, because those 40 homes are just sitting there with no tenants or potential buyers, right? So you got to market those properties, sell those properties. So the idea is to be at 100%. You don't own any of the actual homes. It's just the land underneath them. And then they're renting for 500. That land for that spot is renting for 500 a month. And so what are the tenants? I mean, what are they paying for in that spot? Is it, you know, I guess utilities, right? And then mail distribution. Is there like a park in some of these, or, you know,
there's amenities. So we have dog parks, pavilions, and yeah, we take care of the landscaping and everything around the home, just not the home itself.
No, that makes a ton of sense.
And another way to look at the value is, let's take a home, for example, and you buy it for $300,000 and the comps are $500,000.
Yeah.
That's an awesome deal.
Yeah.
No brainer. If you buy a park and they're currently paying $300 in rent, but the market value is $500, there's a huge gap and a huge opportunity to increase the amount of equity you can get in a park. So the first mobile home park I purchased, the guy hadn't raised rents in 50 years. Wow. He was charging $60 for someone to have their house sit on kind of like a parking stall. And the lowest comp in the area was $300. So from $60 to $300 is like exponentially. Yet I got it off market. So he didn't even know the value of it. He was 85. He was just like, great, you'll buy this with cash.
Yeah.
And so our approach is, we upped the rents in the first 30 days to 150. Then we upped the rents again at 6 months to 250. Now we're in the process of refinancing. And what that means is, I'm going to get all the money I lent. I'm also an equity partner. So I'll forever get mailbox money, even though I have my entire return back. And then when we sell the park, I'll also make money. So I'll get a $1,000 check. And let's say we hold it for 10 years, that's 120K. And let's say we sell it in 10 years for 2 million, that's another 200K. So this concept of passive income, I let $106,000 sit in your account for 12 months. And over 10 years, I'll make $340,000.
Beautiful. So what are the pitfalls with this? Because every form of real estate investing is going to have some type of pitfalls. So like in my head, immediately, just being the always wanting to bridge the gaps. So what about occupancy rates? Do they dive in a situation like that where people are used to paying $60 and then you up it to 150 and then 250 in 6 months?
Let's just say they were riding the wave. They knew that you can only get away with $60 rent for so long. And I'll just be honest, they're glad that an investor didn't come in and push them out and put up apartment complexes or a bunch of townhomes. So truly having, we're still $50 under the rent rate in the area. So, well, mom's still got to put food on the kids' table. So,
yeah, absolutely. Definitely understand that. Well, that's fantastic. That's awesome. Okay, so last question here. And this is one that I ask every one of my guests, no matter the conversation we have.
Okay.
What does legacy mean to you, and what legacy do you want to leave behind?
That's a really good question. And I'm not sure if you know who Dean Graziosi is. I was sitting. He's Tony Robbins' best friend. Okay. So everybody knows who Tony Robbins is.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting with him in a mastermind, and he said, "What's your why?" And he asked the gentleman seven times. He kept asking him, like, why? Yeah, but okay, why? You want passive income, but why? Okay, you want more time? What? Like, went really deep. And mine comes down to when I die. I just want my third generation to be able to take something I've done in this life and apply it in their own life. So financially, setting up systems that they can benefit from, but not hand down money.
I love that, because that's, you know, and I do hear that answer a lot. It's like, hey, I want my kids to never have to worry about money, you know, or my grandkids, or, you know, 10 generations deep or whatever. I want to be the one, like Ed Milet always talks about. But man, I don't know a lot of kids that grew up with money that are doing a whole lot. You know, I know some that are part of like badass families that like they groom them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so many, I see so many entrepreneurs basically go through all this, all the things that we're going through, you know, to make a better life for our kids. And then the one place that they fail, which you just mentioned is the most important to you, which is fantastic, is the transfer of those skills.
Yeah. My kids aren't going to be getting money.
Yeah.
They can learn how to take a loan from a bank I create that someone else is managing. Yeah. And if they present themselves or an opportunity, showing them how to invest it themselves, but not going to ruin them by handing them money.
So I got to ask this. How are you? I mean, how old are your kids, first off?
9 and 5.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So mine are 10 to 13. I got 3.
Okay.
And, how are you basically starting to impart that wisdom on them? Or, you know, are you doing little breadcrumbs? Or are you just work with me?
And
I do kind of thing, or what are you doing there?
Okay. So this could be a whole podcast of what this single mom does in teaching her daughters. So I'll keep it short. Daughter came to me one day and said, "Mom, do you work?" And I was like, "Yes." Well, I'm a single mom and I'm home all the time, so she doesn't see me leaving. I said, "I'm an investor." And she's like, "Okay." I said, "Let's go to Walmart. Here's $25. You're buying all the lemonade stand stuff. But at the end of the day, you owe me $30 because first you're buying a business and $5 is this thing called interest." Mm-hmm. She's like, "What if I don't make $30? I said, "You have two options. You go to your bank account and you pay me back, or you have another lemonade stand tomorrow, but you owe me another $5. That's called a late fee. So you get charged higher interest if you don't pay me back in time." Mm-hmm. And of course, there's tax advantages of you can pay your kids $12,000 a year. And so don't worry. We send out mailers to different mobile home park owners that aren't necessarily selling. And so her job is to fold the papers and stick them in the envelope. So trust me, there's minor ways that you can implement your kids on teaching them.
I couldn't agree more. Mine are finally at that age where they're like asking those curiosity questions. I'm guessing your 9-year-old was the one that asked that. So they started asking those kind of questions. So my daughter, or actually my middle son, is going to be taking on the role of basically my media manager, which he's 12 years old. So he's probably better at CapCut than I am. And I'm teaching him how to film, though, you know, on photos and photography and everything, so he can see what I do every day and be a part of that. Summer's coming up, you know, and what I'm finding is the what is it called, the not omission, when you're just around something and you absorb it. So him being around it is easier than like trying to explain it to him, because once he sees me on a call for like 30 minutes, he was like, "Oh, you just showed them how to recruit more salespeople, or how to, you know, pay them, you know, or how to incentivize them, you know." And so then he understands, versus me saying, "Hey, yes, and I build sales programs for my clients." Okay, totally.
I pay my kids to make friends. I go to school. I'm like, "Look, you go to school, you get a new person's phone number, I'll give you $1 every single time. If you interview someone and you ask them 5 questions, I'll pay you $5. If you can get that friend to come over, then we'll go spend that money with them." Like, whatever, like, you got to learn how to get numbers. You got to learn how to talk to a lot of people. Everywhere we go, they order their own food. We go to the doctor's office. You better believe they're filling out the own iPad. You got to know your address. You got to know, you know, help your kids become as independent as possible as soon as possible.
Heck yeah, I love it. Well, Jill, thank you for coming on the podcast. You dropped a ton of value today, and I love your story so much, because it's what you want to see in door-to-door. A lot of times it needs to be a stepping stone, not a lifetime type deal, right? And so it's awesome that you were able to build that into the foundation that you have now.
For sure.
All right, guys, we'll see you on the next episode. And until then, let's get building.